Welcome to another episode of A Door Into the Dark, TCG's English podcast. Today we're moving towards the junior cycle course, and we're taking a look at the Shakespearean text for our current third years, which is Romeo and Juliet. And our focus for today is kind of looking at the idea of, you know, one of the main themes, I suppose, in Romeo and Juliet, and that's love. So we're looking at it. Is Romeo and Juliet literature's ultimate symbol of romantic love?
You were Romeo, you were throwing pebbles, and then it said, stay away from Juliet. And I was crying on the staircase, begging you, please don't go. And I said, Romeo, take me somewhere we can be alone. I'll be waiting, all there's left to do is run. You'll be the prince and I'll be the princess. It's a love story, baby, just say yes.
I think this is a really interesting topic because, especially for a modern audience, it's not a given that it's a yes. You know, I think automatically you might think, yeah, of course it's romantic love, but there's a lot about this text that's, you know, not very romantic, or, you know, what a modern audience might think of as it's all rash, it's kind of a bit insane. Do we really believe they fell in love at, you know, first sight and within a day are marrying and within 2 days are killing themselves for each other? And do we believe Romeo's is he a sincere character considering how quickly he chops and changes who he loves? So yeah, I think it's an interesting question because it's not a given that yes, it's the ultimate romantic text.
Young hearts run free, never be hung up like my man and me. My man in me. Oh, young hearts, to yourself be true. Don't be no fool when love really don't love you.
We're looking at this idea of, is, you know, Romeo and Juliet the pinnacle of kind of a love or romantic story, and we're discussing what other texts or what other stories could be equally seen as so. And Georgia Lee, do you mind kind of starting us off there? What you think? Is it the prime example, or why do we look at that? Or are there any other texts or stories that you can think of?
Yeah, so I think Romeo and Juliet is considered an example of the pinnacle of romance because of the amount of kind of passion, and the stakes are so high in the story, and it really introduces for the first time that idea of like soulmates, and that they're just instantly connected to one another, and that no matter what happens or no matter what obstacles come into the text, that they have to be together. But as we were saying, that maybe it's not in front of a modern audience that ideal kind of love anymore. And just to try and think of maybe another example of star-crossed lovers, as they're branded in their version of the book, in The Hunger Games, we have Peeta and Katniss kind of presented to the audience as star-crossed lovers who are, you know, fated to die and to end up separated from each other because of the games that they're in. And we said that, you know, their relationship is much more of a slow burn, and that the female Katniss is much slower to kind of give in to her feelings and acknowledge it. And although they try and set up the trope of a love triangle in The Hunger Games with the other male lead, Gale, in the end she actually chooses the more stable and the more kind of healthier relationship between the two, which is not really an option in Romeo and Juliet. So perhaps that could be something to do with maybe what kind of romance the audience is looking for.
Mm. Absolutely, yeah, it depends on what kind of romantic. Do you agree with that, Amy and Lily? Anything you want to add to Hunger Games or anything, other kind of relationships or stories that we know about romantic love, or that we could maybe use a better example of romantic love than Romeo and Juliet?
I think that romance can be very different for different people, and it's not just one thing that like you can achieve or you can't achieve, and there's so much different kinds of love that isn't just like dying for each other. But I also I do quite like the idea of in Romeo and Juliet that it's like they were destined to be together, and like they had, it was always, they were always going to be together, and they were the people who were made for each other. And then it's like the idea, like, are soulmates, do we have soulmates, and are they, or do we like make soulmates? And like Katniss like chooses to be with the safer option, but like, was that her destiny, or was her destiny to be with the other person? And Juliet's destiny was to be with Romeo and die with Romeo, or maybe destiny's not real.
That's something we've kind of mentioned on this podcast in terms of Shakespeare, that fate was really important theme for Shakespeare. And, you know, it's this idea of, are they fated to end up together? Are they fated to meet their doom, I suppose, you know, because of that, is it they're through their actions that they end up like this, or is it that they're just destined to end up as star-crossed lovers, I suppose, we say as well. That's very good.
That's something students find frustrating, you know, about Macbeth or Romeo and Juliet or Shakespeare a lot of the time, is sometimes fate is used in Shakespeare texts as a get out of jail free card, you know.
Absolutely.
It's the, well, it was fated to happen, it was always going to happen, so it wasn't his fault or her fault. I think that with Romeo and Juliet as well, that can be frustrating for students, that idea that they were star-crossed lovers, and that Juliet couldn't have chosen a different option, or, you know, got herself out of it, or Romeo couldn't have gone down a different path, is frustrating in the text, definitely.
Absolutely. And I suppose before we kind of get into the depths of the text as well, I suppose it's important for us to outline what we think or what we understand romantic love to be. So Amy, maybe do you want to take the start there? What would you define romantic love, or what do you understand romantic love to be?
A lot of it comes as an extension of platonic love. And in that sense, it's just a connection that's beyond anything that would be defined as friendship, but that when it happens, you just know, and there's no other way to kind of define it because of the fact that it's so individualized to every person.
Okay. Georgia Lee, would you like to, what do you think, what do you understand, or what would you expect from a relationship of romantic, or from a relationship that has true love or has love involved?
I think romantic love, like the definition of it has changed a lot in recent years, and it was something about kind of passion and romance and red roses and extravagance. But I think as kind of, you know, times change and we modernize more and more, that romantic love is really about stability and safety and, you know, something that adds to your life. I like the idea as well of, you know, a romantic relationship not being something that completes a person. Like, soulmates kind of sells the idea that, you know, you're incomplete until you find your soulmate. But I think it's more so something that adds to your quality of life, or adds to you as a person, somebody that you can grow with and change with, and not somebody that kind of is your missing piece or your better half or something like that. I don't like that kind of talk about romantic love.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's all very, you know, that Romeo and Juliet is not our pinnacle of romance. I think certainly if we're talking about realism and realistic, there are many other more realistic ideas or depictions of what romantic love is. But in terms of being the one that has lasted, the one that has been adapted so long, I still think Romeo and Juliet gets it right in terms of what we want romantic love to be, when with emphasis on the idea of romance and looking at things with romantic eyes, not realistic eyes. I think Romeo and Juliet, the love at first sight, the soulmates, the give it all up for that person.
It definitely has to be a part of it. Like, I do think a small part of everyone wants to have somebody, you know, who is just totally concerned with you and who's just completely in love with you, and, you know, they'd do anything for you. And that idea of, you know, everything else kind of be damned, and I only care for this person and they're like my number one priority. It is something that I think still translates to modern relationships, that you do want to be the number one for another person. But yeah, I think that there's like elements of Romeo and Juliet that really just, they're timeless. The idea of just meeting that right person at the right time, and the idea of being meant to be together, it's kind of reassuring because it's so hard, you know, to find a relationship, or, you know, to trust in love, especially when you're young, and when you're as young as Romeo and Juliet, the idea that it was fated to happen and it was destiny is kind of maybe a comfort in the play, and that you really just, you invest in the two young lovers and you wanted to work out for them.
I'm thinking of you and the things you do to me. It makes me love you. Now I'm living in ecstasy. Hey, it's you and the things you do to me. That makes me love you. Now I'm living in ecstasy.
I think what Georgia Lee said there about passion is very true. So if we're looking at this idea of Romeo and Juliet, the ultimate symbol of love or romantic love, I think, you know, Romeo and Juliet are very passionate, and I think we'd all probably agree with that. You know, you can see that there, that, you know, Romeo goes to the lengths that he does. You know, flying over the wall because he's, you know, loves like wings. Thank you. There we go. Loves like wings. You know, and that, yeah, that they're passionate. You know, wherefore art thou, Romeo? You know, why do you have to be Romeo? I'll renounce my name. You know, if you can't deny being Montague. And yeah, it is very much about that passion and that young passion and just falling in love, and there's nothing else that matters in the world. And I think it really does represent that. And I think if we don't have, I know we could say Romeo is very fickle and, you know, whatever else, and he moves from, you know, Rosaline to Juliet very quickly. But if we don't have that passion, we don't have a play. And, you know, that's what Shakespeare really, I suppose, was doing here, in terms of kind of love and romantic love, and showing that he wants to have an entertaining play. Okay, so that's what. But yeah, I suppose we're kind of looking at, you know, we want to think, yes, it is the pinnacle of love. It is the pinnacle of two people find each other. They see each other from across the room, and, you know, share a holy palmer's kiss and things like that. That they do fall in love. That they do fall in love very passionately, very quickly, and that they would do everything for each other. But I think there's also, on the flip side of that, there are issues with that. And I'm just wondering, maybe Amy or Lily, can you kind of bring us through that? Like, what's the kind of, I suppose, we are saying it's the pinnacle of romantic love, but as a modern audience, for sure, we are looking at it and kind of going, okay, this is, and we do have those frustrations when we teach it with our, you know, our classes, of like, this would never happen in real life, and da-da-da, I can't believe she did this, and I can't believe he did that.
And all the red flags.
All the red flags, yeah, I suppose, yeah, for you, sort of 21st century term. So I'm just wondering, could you kind of bring us through maybe your opinion on that, and kind of the downsides of the romantic love and all those kinds of things?
I think one of the main things is the fact that Juliet's only alternative is a way older man. And that's the only form of love that she's been offered. And within her, the example that she's being set by her parents, her example of love is that sort of docile woman. And in doing so, that means that she sees her relationship with Romeo as sort of an only escape from the family that she has. So when she's presented this romantic relationship as her only option, that probably isn't very healthy for a girl who's in her early teens. And then even so, her and Romeo have an age gap as well. So he's got the position of power within that dynamic, in addition to the fact that she has the thing previously that was set up by her parents. So those are very much, to use that term again, red flags. Mm-hmm. And I think that those would definitely influence the way that specifically as a young girl, you would read that text, and that definitely changes the way that it reads to a modern audience compared to the audience that would have originally seen it.
Do you think they're very irrational characters?
A little bit. That tends to be the case in Shakespeare, like in The Tempest, for example, as well. Miranda falls in love with the first man that she sees.
Yeah.
And he tends to lean towards that there's a bit of the woman throwing herself at the man because he's the first one who's there.
Yeah.
And that a lot of the characters aren't particularly rational. Like, there's the Queen Mab speech as well. A lot of it leans into that kind of insanity and weirdness that means that it comes across less motivated by rationality and more just by this would make it a fun plot.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's supposed to be the insanity to make, you know, to kind of create that idea of an entertaining play, but also, I suppose, linking in with that, with the love and what they do and what they, like you say, it's all-encompassing love and they would do anything for each other. Is there anything, I'm throwing this out here to everybody, is there anything that you kind of read or you that Romeo or Juliet do that you're kind of like, you know, why did they do that? Like, that, you know, okay, yes, I'm kind of going along and I'm suspending belief and all those kinds of things. Because when you go into the theatre, you're kind of leaving your logic sometimes at the door. And that's what I said to my current third years. I was like, they were like, oh, but Miss, like, that doesn't make sense. I'm like, we've left logic at the door. We're doing it as a piece, as a spectacle. But is there any kind of particular moment that you kind of go, you really go, oh my gosh, why did Romeo do that? Why did Juliet do that?
I wish that he had waited one more minute before irrationally deciding to end his life. But because it always makes me so sad that like they could have learned to love each other and like learned to grow up together, but they quickly and irrationally he just ended it everything.
That's it. Yeah, it's the irrationality of youth, isn't it? Yeah. Oh, I'm fortune's fool, I suppose. You know, Romeo's famous quote there, he really is fortune's fool, and that kind of, that final moment, and I suppose it does go back to the idea, it's still a play. It's, you know, it's dramatic. It's dramatic because he, you know, takes the potion in one breath and she wakes up kind of in the next. Any moments that you kind of like look at and kind of go, okay.
Something that always got me about Romeo and Juliet is that both Romeo and Juliet have adult confidants in the play. Juliet has the nurse and Romeo goes to Friar Lawrence for advice throughout the play to arrange the marriage, to arrange the meetings, to escape to Mantua. All of it is done with the friar's knowledge. And I just can't help, as an adult reading the play, wonder why the friar didn't intervene earlier. Because he was kind of a caretaker or a confidant of these two young people who were doing something very dangerous, very irresponsible. And why he didn't just, you know, go talk to the families or explain the situation and say, look, I've wedded them because I believe that this will put an end to your feud and they're in love and it's been blessed by God or whatever.
Yeah, that's true.
And just say, you know, let's give them a chance, instead of covering the whole thing up and then in the end kind of looking out for himself and just kind of scurrying off and leaving the two of them in the tomb and leaving it up kind of to the family to piece together what happened. So I really kind of have a bone to pick with the friar in Romeo and Juliet.
In defence, I suppose, you know, when the moment when he could have, like you said, go to the families and say, look, this is what I've done. Tybalt has just been killed, a beloved cousin of the family. So it, I suppose in his mind, he's thinking not the perfect time to try and, you know, mend a feud that's possibly gone on for generations, and let's let things cool down and then we'll bring it forward. So, but yeah, maybe there was a point when Juliet is betrothed to another man and faking her own death, you know, that he could have.
I think what George Lee says there is right. He really wants to kind of look after his own skin. Or yes, I think when Romeo comes to him, I think he kind of thinks, oh, I could be a part of, like, I could be a part of this peacemaking, you know, change law, you know, change in our society. Mm-hmm. I could be part of this. I could marry them, and I think he does look out for himself there a little bit. But
he's seen the distress that they're both under. He was there. He gave Juliet the potion. He saw Romeo's breakdown after Tybalt died, and he kind of just was like, "Get off to Mantua, and I'll deal with you later." And then everything just goes wrong.
Yeah.
So I cried and I begged for you to love me, say that you love me, fool me, fool me, go on and fool me, love, pretend that you love me, I can't care about it.
I was just going to, like, on a slightly different
tack,
bringing it back to romantic love, seeing as we brought up Friar Lawrence, I thought, you know, I think one of the pivotal scenes in the play is the end of Act Two when they're married, and he gives this kind of odd sermon for a wedding, or warning almost, to Romeo and Juliet, and he says, these violent delights of vinyl dens and in their passion
die like fire and powder.
Which as they kiss consume, there you go. It's almost the message of the play, and it kind of convolutes Shakespeare's own message. So do we listen to that? Is the message that violent love is not, you know, this violently romantic love is bad? Is that the message of the play? You know, Shakespeare's hidden his message of the play in that moment? Because according to the outcome, very violent love is bad, seems to be bad for everyone. And yet our heroes follow that path of very violent love. So I think it just throws a spanner in terms of, is that Shakespeare's opinion, that violent delights of violent ends, or is he more setting Romeo and Juliet up as the ideal, as the pinnacle of romantic love?
Yeah, and he does sprinkle that message of slow down into the play a good few times. Like when Romeo first comes to tell him of Juliet, he says wisely and slow, they stumble that run fast. And Juliet herself voices that concern on the balcony scene when she says it's too rash, too unadvised, too sudden. So it is kind of up to the audience to kind of just determine whether they think, yes, it is all about romantic love, or whether look what happens when you kind of give in to this too quickly.
It's a cautionary tale against romantic love, yeah.
I think a lot of, like, in the modern world, the way that romance is changing, it's like, it's supposed to be safe and equal. And I think that although obviously Romeo and Juliet, like, aren't equal, they are more equal than a lot of the female characters in, like, where it's... They both, like, it's kind of both their decisions, of their irrational decisions, like, they made them together,
I think you're absolutely right, and I was going to say that, Amy, when you were talking about this earlier, that I think you're absolutely right that, yes, Juliet is this, you know, young, and that, you know, there are options of these older men, and she's in some ways a quite, you know, powerless character. But in other ways, she's kind of Romeo's match, like you're saying. Before he says a word to her, she's already in her soliloquy saying, you know, that she'll give up her name for him, you know, or be some other name, or if he will not be, I'll no longer be a Capulet. So she has already made her decision before he ever vows his love. And then when he does come again, she kind of takes control of the situation a bit and says, like George Lee, you said, you know, that this is too fast. If she says, on the one hand, you're moving too fast. And on the other hand, she says, if you're serious about this, then marry me tomorrow. So she takes control and she says, you know, she doesn't let him kind of lead the romance. She decides, well, I'm in love with you. I want to marry you, or I want nothing at all. And that's the way the situation goes. So I think in some ways, while she's very young, she is also presented as his match because he's so led by passion. She manages to be more rational, more reasonable, while still being an absolute romantic.
Do you think that she's punished for being passionate and being and like wanting love the way that, like, in media women often are, like, when, like, for, like, being passionate and, like, wanting romantic love? Do you think that, like, she's punished for it? Because you know, it's like the man who, like, is, like, desiring the woman, but she has to, like, stay, like, you know, like, polite.
She has to resist, and
but Juliet doesn't, and maybe that's, she's punished for, you know, it ends so badly, maybe because she let him in, and, you know, she didn't do what women are supposed to do, like, be.
Yeah, is this another subliminal message from Shakespeare?
Yeah, you know? Warning of, if you don't do what you're supposed to, we're actually be submissive in the way they're supposed to do that. And we were talking about that with Lady Macbeth. You know, she punished because she's passionate, she's full of ambition, and she's punished in the end. So that's a really good question. And I think I'd have to think a bit more about that, and kind of what is he getting across there, that it goes back to these violent delights meet violent ends. You know, it goes back to that idea of. He is saying if you go into this too rash, too ill-advised match, then things are going to end badly, and you're going to end up in, if you're too passionate, too fiery, this is what's going to happen. It's going to end up in death or violence in some way.
If you try and go away from the status quo, you try and move up a rank, or you try and be an equal with your partner. Maybe, you know, you do get punished, and it's like everyone is where they're supposed to be and they have to stay there. I don't know.
That's the fate thing. It's do either of them have any agency in the situation whatsoever?
Absolutely.
When we're told from the prologue that they're both stuck in this situation regardless of what they decide, and is the fact that they move so quickly fueled by their own decisions, or is it because of the fact that fate is pushing them along all the way?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I do think that's why it's such a tragic love story as well, and why so many people kind of, you know, fall for the story, because we're told from the very beginning, like, this is what happens.
Mm.
There's nothing you can do to change it. They're going to die in the end, and I'm going to show you what happened. And we're just kind of led into the story with that kind of terms and conditions attached. Mm. So we know that we can't change anything. We can't they don't have any alternate kind of options. This is what happened. And I think as well, that's why we kind of forgive a lot of their decisions, if that's mm-hmm. the best way to put it. Like, okay, we can see from the start that this was going to happen. And so we kind of accept the decisions that the characters make, and then we feel sad because they ended up this way, because we do get attached to them along the way, and we're kind of rooting for Romeo and Juliet against her kind of overbearing father, against her uncaring mother. The older man Paris is looming over her. Romeo's family are actually quite supportive, but he doesn't feel like he can really talk to any of them. And, you know, you feel sad when he loses Mercutio, and so you have sympathy for Romeo in the situation as well as Juliet. And I think that's another reason why it comes back to being such a kind of staple love story, because we know going in that we can't change anything. We have to kind of accept it as it is.
Yeah. And that goes back to, again, the argument that, yes, it's our pinnacle of romantic love in literature, because, like you said, even though we know the outcome, we can't help but, every time I've read it 11 times, I've taught it, you know, 12 times, can't help but, you know, root for Romeo and Juliet, knowing what's going to come. I still can't help but cringe at the moments. No, don't do that, or, you know.
Every time you just hope for a different ending.
Yeah.
Even though you know it's not going to, like, you know that they're going to, like, die and it's going to be tragic, but you still want it to work out.
Yeah.
Is that it? Is that the idea of, you know, hopeless romantic? You know, that you're always, there's something in part of you is like you want to root for that love story. You want to root for the two star-crossed lovers who were not meant to be together but have somehow ended up in that situation. And you're just like, yes, we want it to work, but no, it's not going to.
Kiss me out of the bearded barley nightly, beside the green, green grass. Swing, swing, spin the spinning step. You wear those shoes and I will wear that dress. Oh, kiss me beneath the milky twilight. Lead me out.
And they are so young as well at the end of the day, and everything does feel so big when you are young. So I think that's why the drama is so heightened in Romeo and Juliet as well, because when you are young, everything is really important. Like, school's really important, friendships are really important. And only maybe, like, with an adult perspective or when we study these things hundreds of years later, can we come in with our judgment. So I do think that it will always be one of those great love stories, even though it infuriates us and it frustrates us every time we watch it or read it.
I guess they don't really have, like, if you think about, like, when it's set, they don't have, like, the luxury of waiting around, because I think it's like most people, a lot of people who've ever lived, like, didn't see the age of 20. So maybe it's like it's also being fueled by, like, how little time they have compared to, like, us as modern viewers. You know, we know that we have mostly, like, have the time to, like, get to know someone and then, like, marry them, like, after dating them for, like, 5 years. But whereas lifespans and life was so much shorter and so much more, like, they didn't understand it. Like, they had less understanding and control over their environment, which we do now as modern viewers and modern,
That aspect of mortality as well, because we see so many characters die throughout it. And that's, like, a constant reminder right in front of Romeo and Juliet of we have very little time, because a lot of the people who died, they don't have that partner. And I think that probably hammers home for both of them that this might be the only chance that they get for this love.
Yeah.